Are you ready?
Hey, think you could tell us what to do? You think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters. Break it down!
DGen Nation, we are back. It has been a long off season, but we are finally back. We are exactly a week away from the start of the NFL season. We're going to get an amazing showdown slate right out the gate with the Bills and Rams going right into a really solid week one of the NFL season for the main slate. But first, Matty, how we doing? How have you been? Now with a dad life.
Oh, dad life's been great. You know, every day seems to be a new challenge, and seems like she's learning something new every day and picking up those motor skills. So it's cool to, you know, see her grow, but trying to stay up to speed on the sleep. Some nights are better than others, but that comes with the territory. So yeah, it's been good, man. No issues over here. It's been great. But also just coming off MLB, this is, you know, really my time to grind back into NFL. As I was mentioning pre-show, I think I've done zero best ball drafts this year, which is, you know, unlike me, but, you know, been grinding MLB pretty hard. Hopefully the MLB luck transitions over into NFL. So we shall see.
I'm ready. I am ready. I am tired of, I am worn out about talking about, you know, the draft or, you know, draft season, redraft. And all that stuff. So I'm looking forward to DFS and get back into that and kind of the grind of it. So, you know, obviously we are going to be going live again next Thursday, which where we go live every Thursday, but we'll be really jumping into the week one slate next week, going a deep dive. We're going to be bringing on Derek Brown for the first week. Looking forward to that. D-Bro is always in good company. Probably tell him he's an idiot within the first 5 minutes of the show, but that's just, you know, on brand for me. So, first things first, you know, let's just kind of look at the implied totals, kind of the totals for next week. Just kind of give us a good idea where some of these totals are right now, and if we get any major changes through next year or through next week. Right now, you pretty much have the Chiefs at the top at 28.75 implied point total with a 53.5 over under. That is the highest on the slate, followed by the Rams or the Chargers and the Raiders, where the Chargers have a 28-point implied total and a 52.5 total. Matty, is there, for you, when you first started looking at this, is there any games that kind of stand out to you that you think could be sneaky?
Yeah, so I think, you know, everybody tends to flock towards the high total games, which makes sense. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do, right? I mean, Vegas is more right than they are wrong. This is the reason Vegas is Vegas. So, I mean, when you look at those high total games, like you mentioned, you got AZ and KC. Chiefs Arizona, that's, you know, highest total of the week for good reason. Mahomes versus Murray, and the Raiders and Chargers are not far behind with you know, that new Raiders offense versus the high powered Chargers offense. So I expect those two to be popular. So then you look at right below those two games, you've got two other games that I expect ownership to be, you know, probably more on the mediocre side, because I think most people are going to flock to those first two games. But you got Philly and Detroit that's coming in at a 49 total. So just below, you know, about 3 points below those other two games. And then you also have Green Bay, Minnesota, which is sitting at 48. And the neat thing about both of those games is they're both being played in domes. So, you know, you don't really have weather issues week one. And that's four defenses that aren't particularly good. You know, the Eagles have a good pass rush. I know they just added a cornerback via trade. But, I mean, I'm still not sold on the Eagles defense being great. I think, you know, this Detroit offense is going to be, you know, they flashed sometimes last year, and I think they're going to be better this year than they were last year. So I really like that Philly-Detroit game. And then the Green Bay-Minnesota game, you know, those two teams on offense, they tend to, you know, score points against each other. If you go back and look at Cousins and Rodgers against each other last year, they both put up big games versus, you know, the other team's defense. So those are the two games I think I'm probably going to end up focusing on, assuming ownership comes in, you know, mediocre for those two. I think that's where my builds are going to start.
If you were to go with the Green Bay, Minnesota, which side would you come on? Would you want to do like a Cousins and Justin Jefferson stack? Or if you went on the Packers side, do you have a lean towards which wide receiver, you know, for the Packers you'd want to go with, like a Lazard or would you go with like an Aaron Jones?
I think I would probably go Aaron Jones. From the Packers side, just because there's so much uncertainty with Green Bay right now. I mean, we don't even know if Christian Watson's going to play. That, you know, there's smoke and mirrors around that. You know, there's talk that, you know, Lazard may be the number one. He may just be just another guy that, you know, is just going to get the ball. But, I mean, if you had to pick a wide receiver, it has to be Lazard, right? It has to. I mean, we know Rodgers will target anybody and everybody, but mainly the guys he trusts, and Lazard and Randall Cobb. Are the two guys that have been around the longest, along with Tonyan and the running backs. So for me, it's, you know, Aaron Jones is going to be, I would assume, you know, heavily utilized with no Davante Adams in the pass game. So I really like Aaron Jones if stacking that game up. And then if I had to pick a receiver, it would be Lazard. I think it's probably easier to just stack the Cousins side and pair him with Thielen, who's $5,400. And you can even roll with like maybe an Irv Smith. Or just play both Thielen and Jefferson with Cousins. That's fine too. I think the Minnesota side is way more predictable. And then, you know, if you just roll Aaron Jones on the other side, you kind of avoid that wide receiver roulette that Green Bay possibly has going on. So, I think, you know, that's a good point. You know, it's not very obvious that game, but that game could be a lot of points. So I think that could lead to depressed ownership there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty good call too, especially just avoiding, because I mean, right now I think it's hard to say exactly who that wide receiver is going to be. I mean, I think a lot of people think it's going to be Lazard. It could be Romeo Doubs. You know, he really shined in camp and in preseason, but I don't know if he, like you mentioned, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers does tend to favor the players that he trusts the most. I think it'd be a pretty big gamble going with somebody like Romeo Doubs there. So, but I think just going, I think you can get the Aaron Rodgers exposure just going through Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones is going to be heavily utilized in the passing game this year. You know, the numbers bear it out, at least, you know, short, small samples. I think it was like a 7-game sample that Aaron Jones averages like over 22 PPR points a game without Davante Adams on the field. So I do like that call as well. I think the Eagles game, the Eagles Lions game could also bear a lot of fantasy goodness, and I don't think a lot of people are going to want to go there, especially early. And I think something else too, when it comes to DFS, especially Week One, is you're going to get a lot more casuals that jump in that just want to jump in. You know, it's Week One, they're excited, you know, and maybe they don't play a whole lot of DFS. So I think you can get a little bit of an edge there as well, because I think everybody's going to go to this Chiefs Cardinals game. Or the Raiders and the Chargers game. I think those two are just going to be where most of the ownership lies because of how high this is. Though I will say, I do think with on the Chiefs side of the ball, I think there's some leverage to be had because the Chiefs are in a little bit more of a similar situation where I think most people would go to Mahomes and Kelce. And I don't know if people would go as much to like Juju. And then you have MVS, you have Sky Moore and Mecole Hardman, where you could get a little bit different in your stack if you wanted to go with the Chiefs. And kind of just see whoever the most popular is, which I would assume it would be, you know, Kelce 1 and then Juju 2. And then so if you want to get a little bit different, instead of going like a Juju or Kelce, maybe go with an MVS or Hardman. I think those are ways if you want to attack that game to get a little bit different. I think you could do that as well.
I don't even hate Clyde Edwards-Helaire personally. I know it sounds gross, but I mean – they don't really, I mean, other than McKinnon, like I'm not trusting Ronald Jones. You know, all the KC guys were saying he was a potential cut candidate and they ended up keeping him. But I saw a little nugget that, you know, they're running more formations that's similar to what was run at LSU. And I don't think that's because they want, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire to become better. But I mean, you know, if there's, you know, more play types that are being run that condone to his skill set. I mean, he caught what, 60 balls in his senior year or his last year at LSU. Like, the dude is not like, we're just writing him off after, you know, one down year when he was like a consensus back into the first round pick, beginning of second round pick. Like, I'm not ready to write him off just yet.
The only thing that worries me about him is that they just don't utilize him on third downs and they don't utilize him in the passing game, at least as much. I mean, we saw it last year with Darrell Williams. He was pretty much the third down and, you know, the passing game, and really even goal line. I mean, they don't get Clyde Edwards-Helaire goal line work either. And so, like, that's the only thing that he's, I think he's going to be frustrating, because he's more of a 20-20 guy. But his price at 5,400, though, on DraftKings does make him where I think it's easier to get somebody like him. And you're right. I mean, he definitely could pop off. I guess let's talk a little bit, because, like, we don't want to go – we're not going to go too deep into the pricing and everything else, but we just wanted to do something like just a little bit of an overlay. Typically, if you're new here – we usually go, you know, position by position. We don't go game by game. We go start quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, then we'll build a lineup at the end. But because we're going to be right back here doing this again next week, we don't want to go through everything super heavy. But when you first – your first look at pricing, was there anything that really stood out to you?
Yes, they did a – for the most part, they did a good job with the quarterbacks, I feel like, because you got to pay up for those top QBs. They're over 7K. Like, Mahomes is at what, 77? So, I mean, it's not easy to fit a quarterback at 7,700. So I think they did a good job with that. I also think that there's a ton of really good values in the mid price range. We'll talk about it, but like Michael Pittman, 5,500, like there's some clear misprices where guys are going to be priced, you know, 1,000 to 1,500 above what they currently are this week, as we go through the next couple of weeks. And then there's also, you know, other position player guys like McCaffrey and Taylor. You know, McCaffrey's 8,500 and Taylor's 9,100. You're going to have to make tough decisions on those guys. Those guys, you know, cost $2,500, 3K more than Saquon Barkley does. So, you know, if you're a believer in Saquon this year, like I am, you know, it's kind of hard to pay, you know, 2K more, 2,500 more for McCaffrey than it is for Saquon, assuming that, you know, Saquon is going to do well this year and especially this week, because that's all we care about. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting piece to the puzzle. What I didn't see was there wasn't a ton of bottom of the barrel guys. Like, there's Wandale Robinson we'll talk about next week at 3K. But he was like the first and one of the few guys that I saw that's that low. I think they did a pretty good job of pricing up, you know, these role player guys that could end up being, you know, heavily involved in some of these offenses. So all in all, I think the pricing is, it's a little soft in some areas, but I think in other areas it's really good, especially a quarterback.
Yeah, I think quarterback's fine for the most part. There's nobody that, like, stands out to me that, especially towards the bottom half, like, there's nobody that just didn't stand out to me of, like, guys that, especially at the bottom, that you really, you know, feel like is mispriced. I think there's some definite options down below, especially, you know, if you want to go with, like, a Trey Lance or something like that. I think you could do, like, Trey Lance naked, you know, kind of like we used to do back in the day with, like, Cam Newton a lot, where he didn't really want to pair him up with any of his pass catchers. But I think just, you know, playing him naked, I think is an option. He's only 6K, something like that. But at the other position, like, you already, like, called him out. Like, Christian McCaffrey at 8,500 is a steal. I mean, he's a guy that's usually always over 10K because of his usage, because of his pass catching involvement in the offense. It's not really – I mean, Cleveland does have a very good defense, but his pass catching, you know, he can pretty much crush anybody. And at 8,500, it's really hard not to like that. And then – you know, Jonathan Taylor, he's playing the Texans. He's going to be very chalky. Everybody's going to want to play him. I mean, it's one of the best running back matchups you have on the entire slate. And 9,100 is probably still feels a little cheap for him, where he could probably, you could look at him maybe being close to more of a 10K type guy, especially for the, you know, be able to get that 100-yard rushing bonus. I mean, he hit over 100 yards plenty of times last year. But I think this kind of middle range of running backs kind of stood out to me, because once you get past kind of a few of the top guys, I think there's a lot of different ways you can go. I mean, you know, Alvin Kamara against the Falcons, he's cheap at 7,600. DeAndre Swift is another one that I like at 6,800. Mm-hmm. Just kind of, you know, looking through. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Travis Etienne's 5,600. Like I said, I'm not trying to go too deep, but even somebody like Antonio Gibson now, with what happened with Brian Robinson, like he's now back locked into being the starting running back here of this offense. And he's only, I think, was it 5,800, 5,600 at his price. And he's the starting running back playing Jacksonville. So, you know, I think he is somebody that we could look at, you know, in this middle range of running back. And then, of course, you have the absolute chalk that's going to be Damian Pierce, who is 4,800. He is going – do you view him at all like a free square at that price?
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily call him a free square. I think he's a good play because of volume, but there's definitely paths where he doesn't hit a ceiling to where you don't need him in tournaments. Because I mean, he's going to get what, 20 carries, but
The path for him not working out would be he doesn't get as much. He's not involved in the involved in the passing game. And if Rex Burkhead gets that role, especially at least early on, and then if he
doesn't score,
yeah. And if they fall behind quickly, then maybe he gets phased out of this game plan. So I'm going to be really interested to see where his ADP still suck and redraft where his ownership lies come next week. This is to see kind of. Because if he's going to be like mega chalk, I will have probably zero of him. Because there's so many different ways for him to fail.
I agree, and there's so many good plays too in like that 5,500 range that I don't think it's necessary to just eat that $4,800 chalk. Like Thielen's 5,400 against Green Bay, that with the gate game we just talked about. Michael Pittman's 5,500. Michael Pittman's $700 more, but he's way better chalk than Pierce is.
Yeah, I mean, even like Kenyon Drake, if he ends up being the starting running back because J.K. Dobbins can't go next week, then Gus Edwards isn't ready. I mean, Kenyon Drake's only 5K against the Jets.
Jeez.
So I think, you know, I think there's some pivots there if you wanted to do something like that.
Go, I mean, that Drake. In that Baltimore offense, like all you have to know how to do is just run forward. Like I don't know much about NFL terminology, like in the huddle, but I'm sure it's a pretty, one of the easier offenses to pick up for an NFL running back would be Baltimore. And I mean, his skill set should cater right to what Baltimore wants to do. So.
Yeah. So Walido, appreciate you as always with a $20.
Yes, sir.
Maddie. DJ Nation's freaking back. Yeah, it is. It is back. We were supposed to be back last week, but you know, baby duty came into play.
Yeah,
you know,
man.
The things happen, but yep. We're happy to be back now. And I'm really looking forward to next week. Get D-Bro on here and, you know, cut it up with them. So anyways, appreciate you, Walido, as always. So, anything at the tight? Is there anything at the tight end position? We have less than one position we really haven't talked about at all. Is there anything that really stood out there?
Yes, my tight end will come from the Philly-Detroit game, 100%. I will probably not roster a tight end outside of Hockenson and Goddard. They're both below 5K, and they're both playing bottom of the barrel tight ends defenses. Both Detroit and Philly play, you know, zone schemes that allow a ton of production to tight ends over the middle of the field. So that, and they're, I mean, Goddard and Hockenson, those are two of the main guys on each offense. I think they're both priced too cheap. Hockenson's a 5,500 to 5,800 type player, and same for Goddard. I think he's going to end up in that $5,300 range. He's 4,500. So that's where I'm going to end up personally.
That is a really good price for Dallas Goddard at 4,500. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to really look past that.
Yeah. And if I had to pick somebody outside of those two, I mean, it's hard not to like Kelce, right, against anybody. But I really like Kyle Pitts, even against New Orleans. I really like him. Mariota's always catered to tight ends. Like he fed Delanie Walker top five tight ends every single year for 3 years.
Yeah, I think if you want to pay down a little bit, I think there's some options. David Njoku at 3,900, I think is somewhere, you know, that I have interest in. If you're doing a Minnesota stack, you want to get a little bit different. I think Irv Smith, if he plays at 3,400, is super cheap as well, and something that you can fit into your stack. Past that, I mean, there's, you know, some guys like Brevin Jordan who could end up being a Packer.
I just knew you were going to mention him.
Yeah. Hey, how many times did I mention him last year, especially at the end of the year last year? I mean,
every single week. Yeah. And every week he had two catches for 14 yards and a touchdown.
That's all you need for your cheap tight end. That's all you need. The real question is, are we playing Dan Arnold?
No, I can't do it. The preseason usage was terrifying. I can't. I would love to. Mo Alley Cox is an interesting one for Indy against Houston. That's an interesting one. Especially if you were to play Matt Ryan and go Ryan, Pittman, Cox. Matt Ryan's like 5,500. Pittman's 5,500. And then Mo Alley Cox is like 3,400. That is a very, very cheap three-man stack. That's Indy's got, would you say, the fourth or fifth highest total of the week?
Indy, yes, they're the fourth highest, I believe.
Yeah, so I mean, they're going to score, and if it's not a $9,100 Jonathan Taylor that's scoring, I mean, it's $5,500 Matt Ryan, and he's throwing the ball to likely $5,500 Michael Pittman, and then probably also Mo Alley Cox. So, that's a really cheap stack there in Indy, and I really like that a lot.
Yeah, I think he's interesting.
And you can run it back with Walido's boy, Brandon Cooks, who Davis Mills just peppers over and over and over again every single week.
No, I think that makes some sense too as well. Let me ask you as well while we're here, because like I said, I mean, we could get into the weeds on a lot of these options, but like I said, I'm trying to save some of this stuff. I don't want to reveal too much, so we have a lot more to talk about next week, and so we're not just you know, like we talked about last week, you know, this guy, you know, so we can be a little fresh. In terms of game selection, contest selection, what is this? What are things that you look at or type of contest you like to typically play?
I personally don't play in anything anymore that's over a thousand people. I can't tell you the last time I played in something that's over 1,000 entries. It's your likelihood of winning first place is very, very, very low. And most spots that pay out, even if you have a high scoring day, and let's say you have a high scoring day and don't win, you're likely going to end up only like 4xing. But where if you were to, you know, win a tournament that only had like 200 people, yeah, sure, your payout for first place is not going to be near what it would be if you were playing 1,000 people and win first place there. But your first place win is going to be more like 20x on that small tournament. So you're just increasing your bankroll just by playing in those smaller contests, because coming in first in a tournament is really all you care about. So just increasing your chances to come in first is really the big thing. And even if you've, you know, got to go up in entry fees just a little bit to make it work, I think it's definitely worth it, because throwing small dollars at the 20,000 people or, you know, even like 5,000 people is, I think it's just a waste of money over the long run. You're going to end up losing because it's not sustainable. Like you have a good day and you get 3x or 2x, and it's like, well, dang. But whereas if you jump in a smaller tournament, you know, you got 5, 6, 7x, and you know, then you can go 5 weeks on that same, it's 5 weeks of losing on that same entry amount, and you know, and you still would make your money back. So,
I think there's also
the shift that I made.
Well, but I think there's also something to part of that as well, is that, like, I think whenever you first, like, especially if you're new to DFS or you haven't played it very long, you see those huge contests with those bets, huge prizes.
They suck you in.
Yeah, and you like, oh, I want to play this, but I mean, some of those contests have like 300,000-400,000 entries in them, and it's just, the chances of you winning that. And the other good part that you don't have to worry about is that you don't have to worry about that off the wall.
Correct.
Less than 1%, just random person, a player that somebody threw in that nobody was on that happens to, you know, take down a tournament or something like that. You don't have to worry about those things. The smaller the field, generally speaking, the more cash it becomes, right? Where a lot of the same plays are, a lot of the teams are very similar, but it's those making those small little adjustments to kind of get your lineup unique versus having to try to come up with the most unique lineup you can. Because once you start stretching out how many entries are in a tournament, even if you're talking like 30, 40, 50,000, you know, entries in a tournament, that's still, you still have to come up with, you know, even you have to be even more unique because of the how many different entries are going to be in there. Because you will look at the top of all those every week and be like, how did these people even get on these players?
Yep.
You know, but it's because they're using, you know, Fantasy Cruncher or whatever, or a lineup optimizer, and they're spitting out 150 lineups and boom. You know, and you know they get all these random exposures to things, and you're probably getting run over if you're not able to enter 150 lineups into a tournament that's 150 max. I mean, I think you're wasting your time. So I've gotten to the point where the highest I will play in is a 20 entry max, and there's usually only one or two tournaments that I'll play in that are that high.
Hey there, did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the most part, though, I will stick now to basically single entry or three entry max at the most. Because that will really limit, you know, you running into a lot of those things.
Yeah, because then, I mean, you've got the same amount of teams as everybody else, so you're on a pretty even footing with, you know, if me and you are the same skill level, right, at DFS, but you have 150 teams and I have three, you know, over the course of, you know, a season, you're going to come out ahead of me just because, you know, you have more chances and we're the same skill level. So that's, you know, that's why I like to play single entry or three entry max, because I hand build my teams and, you know, that's just what I do. And so, you know, I'm on an even playing field with folks, but more importantly, to your point, I can't tell you how many times I've been in a, you know, a 65 or 70 man field and, you know, something random will happen. Like even in baseball, you know, there's a random home run, or football, there's a random, you know, 75 yard touchdown. And you're like, oh man, I bet the guy in first has this guy. And then you go to the DraftKings standings and you go to the players and you see that guy is not even on anybody's team. You're like, oh, okay, well, I'm still alive. Like, I don't have to have that guy anymore to win, right? So it's it definitely makes your contest more winnable the lower amount of players you go. And also to your point about being unique, when you're in those, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of people contests, I mean, your lineups have to be perfect. So it gets to the point where, you know, so it's not always about correlating your teams, and you just ultimately have to have the best plays on the entire slate. So it's a lot of times in first place, you'll see there's some correlation, but there's a lot of one-off guys that, you know, are just the guys that ended up scoring all the touchdowns. So when you play in those smaller field tournaments, you can still be unique, but it's easier to be responsible about being unique, if that makes sense. Like, you can, instead of stacking up Kansas City, Arizona, for example, just go stack, you know, Philly and Detroit. Whereas in the, you know, the Millie Maker, you know, people might end up stacking Chicago and San Francisco. And like, that's like at a 41.5 total, but, you know, Trey Lance, sure, he could end up as the highest scoring quarterback on the slate, but it's unlikely. But I mean, those are the kinds of rosters and kinds of shots you have to take when you're playing in those really, really large contests. Whereas, you know, those types of plays are going to be much less owned, and you're not going to have to get as creative with those. So that's why, you know, I like playing in the smaller field contest. You know where the field's going to go. The field tends to play the more chalky guys because they're the better plays, and people tend to just play the best plays in those smaller contests. And so you can just responsibly pivot to games that are still really good to load up on. That they're just going to be lower owned. And if that game hits, you know, you win. And that's what it's all about, is getting, you know, getting a couple tournament takedowns over the course of a, you know, 22 week season or whatever it ends up being after the playoffs are all said and done. But That's the goal is to win tournaments, not to min cash. So,
yeah. Do you, and then, I mean, cause you are also somebody that I want to say unique, but, you only build one lineup every week, right? And you enter them to whatever contest you're playing, depending on how many single entries or whatever you're playing, but you only have your main lineup, right?
Yeah. Most weeks. And some weeks, if I can't decide which team or which stack I want to end up on, cause I still do stack, even though I'm just playing one team. If I can't decide, whether this week, whether I want to go Jalen Hurts with, AJ Brown and Goddard and run it back with Swift and Amon-Ra on the other side, or, maybe I want to go Cousins with Thielen and Jefferson and run it back with Aaron Jones on the other side. Or if it gets down to that point where, I don't have like a huge lean over one or the other, I'll just play both, because it's like, I'm not going to sit here and waste time trying to decide between the two when they're a 50-50 toss up. So, I'll just play both and, hopefully one of those two is the right answer.
Yeah. I guess so. For people that are starting out, like let's say, or that you maybe just started playing last year and you're just kind of getting your feet wet with DFS, what would you say would be the better strategy for them? Because for me, like I feel like because I've had people ask me before, like especially like where I work at and stuff like that, that have asked me about it and I kind of want to get into it. Like I always tell them the same thing. It's like avoid all the top contests. As soon as you open the app, you go to the website, avoid all those top ones because those are going to be all the massive contests, the stuff we just talked about, and try to find, even if you want to go and play in the quarter, go play in the dollar, or whatever, the jukebox, whatever you want to do, and really start like learning how to, roster construction and how everything kind of works out, whatever. But from there, I still think people would be better off with, finding a, even if you wanted to, a, because the thing I will never do ever is play cash. And I think because one, I would like cry if I had this lineup that would have taken down a tournament and you played it in cash and you got your money back or you 50-50 or whatever, like, and so like to me, I would just rather play in a single entry or a three entry max, and I think you can find a relatively, $12, I think is a good entry point. For that, where they
also too, these days everybody has access to all the content in the world that you could ask for from all a lot of top minds in the industry, whether it's free, like sites like Fantasy Pros, or whether you're paying for something behind a paywall. People are taking in content everywhere, so like the really good plays are the obvious ones. And those are going to be 60% owned in cash games. And like, I don't want to, I don't want to have to force myself to not play the really good plays, right? Just to be different. So, and also the cash lines in cash games are similar. They're a little bit lower, but they're pretty similar to the cash lines in tournaments anyways, where you're going to 2X your money if you, just min cash. So why not, have that chance to, 20X if you come in first or whatever the first place payout is. So that's why I think the edge in cash games is gone completely these days, and playing in tournaments is the way to go. It's obviously feels more risky, but like I said, even if you were to, if you just win one tournament this year and it pays out, let's say 30 or 40X, and you were to play the same entry fees over the course of the year and lose every other week, you still come out ahead, 15X your money. Because you would lose the other 20 whatever weeks that you played at your same entry fee. So you're still coming out ahead. So it really is all about just winning, a couple tournaments a year in NFL, really in any sport, but that's the goal is to shoot for first. But the other thing I think is a mistake when people play in, or for new players, is, they try to get a little bit of every game. Because they're afraid that, I want a piece of the Chiefs. Oh, I want a piece of the Eagles. Oh, I want a piece of the Packers. Oh, I want a piece of, this team. And they end up playing, like one guy here, one guy there. And it ends up being, on paper, the best plays from each team. But at the end of the day, that's not necessarily what always works out. Because, good players have dud games, right? Even when they're in good spots. What you want to get right is the games that are right to get right. So that's, when a game goes, when a game you're stacking is 33-30, you're getting all the points to that 33-30 game, and you're blowing every other game out of the water because that's the game you have the exposure to. And so it's a lot easier to get a game right than it is to get eight different players right. So that's why I tend to stack and correlate my lineups that way, is because I think it's much easier to just nail a game and then try to figure out, you know, the handful of players from that game that could crush and just play them all. If that game goes off, you're generally doing well.
Yeah, and I would also say, too, that if you really spread yourself out like that and want to play, you know, all the guys, whatever, then you end up, you're probably not, because you'd have to have, like, a perfect lineup to hit on everything else to do so, because you're going to be spread so thin. So you're going to end up having, you're going to end up losing a lot, you know, because depending on how much you're playing, unless you're playing, like, the quarter or whatever. Because the way I look at it is, if it was me, I would try to find, you know, whatever you're, let's say you're playing $50 every week. Let's just say that's easy number, right? I would try to make at least 30-40% of that be just single entries, like your main lineups that you're going to play. And if you really want to try to get, you know, get a little bit different, have some fun with it, jump into $1 and throw in, you know, 10 lineups or whatever there, and then get a little different. You can do whatever you want that, but I would still have my main core your main lineup that you're running, or your main two or three lineups, however you want to do it. And that's your main core. That's your main player pool that you're running with. And then if you want to have like a side pool, like I said, of you know, $10 every week that you play into the $1, I think you could do that as well. If you hit that, I mean, because like I think the $1, I think first place is like $10,000. So even if you did really well and you hit one of those, I mean, you still had a really good week, whatever. But you're not killing yourself, and you're not losing a ton of money, because if you go into and jump into some of these other ones, the higher up you go, you know. You're still playing against a massive pool, hey, but you're spreading yourself so thin, you're probably never going to win either.
Yeah,
and so I that's kind of the way that I would look at it and the way that I would run it. So lastly, we have to talk about Showdown. I want to talk a little Showdown. All right,
let's talk Showdown.
it is my favorite way to play now. Like, I love the main slate and all that stuff, and I get excited for it and all that stuff. But my favorite way, like, I get amped for Showdown slates every Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night. It's my favorite way to play, because there's so many different combinations. And I took one down last year, which was awesome. We did actually happen live on the show.
Yeah, we were live sweating that
Thursday night when it happened.
You were not paying attention to me at all.
No, I completely checked out, like, because I was right there, and it was like right at the last part of the game, and I took that down. That was awesome. That was the 49ers and the Titans game.
Yep.
But there's so many different variations of ways you can go with that, with Showdowns. I tend to find that like 4v2s is usually the best way, or even like even getting crazy going to 5v1, which is that lineup that I took it down was, where I had AJ Brown and the captain, and then I had five 49ers to go with that. Some other things that I never do is play a quarterback in the captain spot. I think you're better off going with a running back and a wide receiver in those spots. And so, you know, because like this week, for the best example, like for like this week's Showdown, which I guess we can get a little more of that, because we're not really going to talk about that on Thursday. So you have the Rams and the Bills. And right now, Cooper Kupp is like 12-6. If I'm playing Cooper Kupp, I'm not playing him anywhere outside of the captain spot, because he's so expensive, and everybody's going to play him. And if you really want to get different, it would be to fade him. So either if I'm playing him, he's going in the captain spot, because he has to go nuclear to pay off that prize. Like, he has to have that monster game to go off, to be worth it at that cost, where I would rather either, if I'm going to play him, I'm not playing him in the flex. I will play him either in the captain, or I'm fading him and I'll go with somebody else. Because you're going to get huge leverage off that, because he's probably going to be the highest owned captain as well. And I just think there's much better options. Like I think Allen Robinson's like 6'2". I would rather play him in the captain. I think he makes a lot of sense for a captain option. Going to the Bill side, you know, you have Diggs. You know, we have to monitor what's going to happen with Isaiah McKenzie, because he's only 2,600, I think, 2,400. But I just, with Showdowns, though, the other thing I will mention is, if you're going to play Showdown, expect to chop it up with people. It's very rare to have a solo takedown. I think the one that I won, I think it was me and one other person, so we tied, that had the same lineup, which is pretty rare. Because there's a lot of times the showdowns can be super frustrating because you could be chopping it up with like 30 people. If like the main chalk of showdown hits, you're going to be chopping that up, which is super frustrating. Unless you probably have a little bit better option, chances of doing that if you play. If there is some single entry on showdown that maybe you could get into, that maybe it's not as likely, but for the most part, for showdowns, you're going to be chopping it up with people.
Yep. I couldn't agree more with any of that.
Yeah. So one thing that I found that you can do is run train lineups. So essentially you'd play like the same lineup in clusters. So like, let's say it's a 20 entry max. Maybe you'd play, end up having four or five different lineups, and then you run that same lineup through those clusters. And then, so if you do chop it up, you're obviously getting more return on your investment, or even just cashing, you're going to be a lot better off. Because, with having so few of options, obviously it's one game you're relying on. I think the cluster strategy ends up being the best way to go with if you're going to be playing in a multi-entry type tournament for that showdown slate. So that's one way you can get a little bit of leverage.
Yeah, I've never done the cluster strategy myself.
Well, I assume even on showdown, you probably still only play one lineup. Is that
the way? Yeah, most of the time, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah. And do you still try to play single entry or three entry max on showdown?
I tend to play in all the same size contests regardless of what the slate is, whether it's showdown or classic.
Yeah, so it wouldn't make any sense. It wouldn't make sense in that way, but and also never play defense or kickers. That's not really a rule. People should do that.
You play them in when there's low total games. You play defenses and kickers. They tend to be more optimal.
I hate high scoring games though.
You need all position players.
I hate myself for doing it.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely one of those sex with jeans on type of plays.
Yeah, and there's nothing worse either, I will say. Than having to do that, and then your kicker goes out and gets five field goals and you didn't play him and you just got buried by the kicker. But yeah, it is what it is. But I will say the opposite side of that, the best feeling is when your $200 play ends up scoring a touchdown and you're going off because he was 1%.
Oh yeah.
And he ends up paying off those.
For me, I get excited when my $200 play is on the field.
Touches the ball, gets a catch,
right? It's like my $200 play every it's crazy when you play showdown. You're plugged into every single snap. You're like, oh my god, this guy got a 2-yard rush. Oh my god, wait, do I have I that's not good for me. It's like you're just sweating these 2-yard rushes. Or like I remember I played like Josh Gordon on a Chiefs showdown last year when he was 200, and I think he just whiffed a touchdown catch. Like, it, I can't remember if it hit him in the helmet or you just missed him completely. But I was like, oh my god, no. I had like a 5% Josh Gordon, and he missed, they're using him like a tight end at the goal line, and he just completely whiffed on a Mahomes fastball. And it's like, no. And the announcers are like, Josh Gordon's just out there trying to get his feet under him. You can expect him to have some growing pains as he's here to learn and get back in the NFL shape. And I'm like, no, damn it, catch the ball. That's a touchdown for me. But it's like you're just, every single snap means something to you on showdown, which is pretty cool. Not good for your health, but who cares about that?
Yeah, I'll never forget. I think it was a few years ago. I think it was Travis Benjamin, maybe. It was a Chargers game. Mm-hmm. And he was like 200, and I played him in some lineups, and he barely played, but he goes in, catches a 60-yard bomb for a touchdown, and I just lost it. But I don't know. It's a lot of fun. And with showdowns, I mean, things could change very quickly. I mean, even the worst, mm-hmm. like even just like a last play of the game where they do one of those little dump offs real quick.
Yep.
Game's over. Some random running back that somebody had all of a sudden, goes for 30 yards.
Or they're doing laterals, and then the defense picks it up, and it's a fumble recovery touchdown all of a sudden.
Yeah, or what? It's crazy shit. So it can completely flip the slate on its head when those things happen. So I don't know. I just love showdowns, and I think that's there's a lot of different ways you can go with them. But from playing you know, the last couple of years, and I play a ton every, you know, every single week. I play every single showdown slate. And, you know, I think going either like a 5v1 or a 4-2, I think is the best way to go. And don't be afraid of, you know, even if you're on the two side, you know, one of those being the captain. Like I said, that's how I did with the 5v1, where I had one from the Titans. The only player that I wanted was AJ Brown, played him in the captain. All the rest were 49ers. I didn't have this quarterback or anything like that. So anyways, well, we've been going for 45 minutes now.
Wouldn't be a show with us if it didn't go too long.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I know this is kind of bare bones a little bit, but we didn't want to, with us doing coming right back here next week, we didn't want to.
That was good though, because we talked about, you know, games and players a little bit, but I mean, we focused a good amount on strategy and game selection. So I definitely think that's a good kickoff show for the week.
Yeah. Really quickly, a couple of questions we have here. Thoughts on my 14-team half point PPR? It's not the prettiest. Kyler Murray, Debo, Thielen, CMC, Connor, Damian Pierce, Christian Kirk, Hunter Henry, and Saints DST. That's the starting lineup.
I think that looks fine.
Especially in a 14-team.
Yeah, 14-team. That's pretty solid.
I mean, to be able to get Christian McCaffrey and Connor, and I think Damian Pierce ends up.
Hunter Henry might be the only hole in that team, but it's tight end, so you're allowed to have a hole there. There's, you know, only five good ones in the NFL on a weekly basis. So,
yeah, no, for sure. So overall, I think this is actually a really, really solid team. Wide receivers are pretty good. I don't know what your bench looks like, but I think you did well. I think it's especially, like I said, 14-team leagues. I mean, you're spread even more thin with the options you have. And you have a really solid group of running backs. Like I said, Damian Pierce ends up being a steal.
It's a good season-long team. It feels safe. It feels like a safe lineup. There's a lot of safety there with, you know, not too many risky guys.
Yeah. And then Flappy, my wide receivers are Lamb and Jefferson, and my running backs are Etienne and Dobbins. How well are those two categories? You crushed
Lamb and Jefferson. Yeah, I mean, that's two of the top five easily. Yeah.
Running back, I really like Travis Etienne, but Dobbins scares the hell out of me. He's still hurt. He's not ready to go. And now we got the video of him limping in practice, and he's awfully defensive, isn't he? Like, people post about him, and he goes into the comments and like starts talking shit to him. I'm like, damn, dude.
Yeah.
Like, why even say anything? What's the point? But I will say this. Did you see the video of the drill he was doing and he limped afterwards?
No, I didn't see it.
It was yesterday or something. I didn't think it was that bad. Like, people were talking about it, like, on Twitter and everything. Like, oh, my God, he's got this limp. And, like, you have to, like, really be looking for it to see, like, that he limped, you know? And it could have been, like, I don't know. He could have been doing all kinds of things. Like, I don't know. I just thought it was weird about the whole situation. But
maybe he had to poop.
Maybe.
It must be a Baltimore thing. Didn't Lamar go poop and then came back and won the game for them?
Oh, yeah. That
in the was crazy, that, was that crazy game against Cleveland?
Yeah, I was going to see how the Browns. That's right. So, anyways, but yeah, I think your wide receivers are fantastic here, but your running backs, mainly Dobbins, worries me a little bit. But I do like those wide receivers. I think you did well there. So, anyways, I don't think we need to waste anybody else's time. I think this was a good jumping off point. We wanted to kind of get back in the groove, get back in the saddle. We will be here every week all the way through, really, the Super Bowl. We do playoffs, which might be our favorite. We have our infamous Thanksgiving Day slate show that we come on for a three-game slate and talk for 4 hours about, you know, three games. That happens every year. That one we usually get Ryan on and some of the other boys on for that one.
That'll be here before you know it. It's crazy. Yeah.
I know, it flies by. It's week one. Next thing you know, you're on to the Thanksgiving slate. This year, too, though, I'm kind of looking forward to, because we're also going to get Christmas Day slate with a three-game slate.
Yep.
So we're going to get two of those this year, which I am really excited about.
Yeah, because usually I'm playing NBA on Christmas Day, but now we get NFL, and now I can play that instead.
Well, in the NBA, yeah. I mean, that day is, like, packed with sports.
Oh, it always is, in NBA at least.
And the Christmas Day slate, I think, is actually better than the Thanksgiving Day slate, if I remember, because you have Packers and Dolphins, which is okay, Broncos-Rams, which could be an elite game to play, you know, for DFS, and then you also get Bucks-Cardinals, which is really good.
Okay, yeah, that is a really good three-game slate.
So it's a really good slate.
Assuming there's no big injuries. But
yeah, of course, you know, those teams aren't wrecked by injuries by the end of the year.
Yeah, or Tom Brady retires.
Oh, yeah. Or Dancing with the Stars, whatever he wants to do.
Mask Singer.
Yeah. Because this year's Thanksgiving slate isn't terrible. It's the Bills and the Lions, Giants and Cowboys, and then Patriots and Vikings. Like,
okay, just stack Bills, Lions.
Yeah. Or I don't know. Who knows? Maybe Daniel Jones will come out here slinging the rock. And, you know,
maybe. I don't know.
Giants-Cowboys game could go off. But
Dallas needs to – I mean, if they don't sign 40-year-old Jason Peters – I didn't see if they actually signed him today or not, but I know he was visiting. But they won't be able to protect Dak if they don't grab somebody like that. They're already without wide receivers. Gallup's hurt. They got rid of Cooper. Consider me one of the few that thinks Dallas's offense is not going to be very good.
So yeah, we'll find out. So anyways, that being said, so like I said, we'll be back here again next Thursday night, tilting our first, showdown slate.
Yep.
And, you know, we'll, like I said, we'll have D-Bro on next week. We're going to have a lot of guests on. We'll have D-Bro on quite a bit this year. I told him he could have an open invitation. Whenever he wants to be on, he can be on. He's like a third member, unofficial third member.
Just send him the StreamYard every week. And when he joins, he joins. Because when he gets that link, I know he gets the itch. If he goes and pours himself a glass of bourbon, he tends to jump on.
Yeah, we had multiple times, not last year, with the years prior, where you guys didn't even know he was going to come on. And I would just send him the link, and he would just randomly jump on for the show.
We love it.
Yeah, and we'll try to get Ryan back on the show as well. So. We'll get him on. At that point, we'll have to talk about FanDuel.
We'll have to talk FanDuel, yeah. That's okay. We can make the sacrifice to get Ryan on for a show.
Yeah. So we are mainly a DraftKings only type show. Anyways, that being said, we're happy to be back. NFL season is a week away. I am excited. I am ready for DFS. I had enough of talking about season-long leagues and all that stuff at this point. I am ready for the season to be here to actually start talking about real games, stuff that really matters. So with that being said, Maddie, congratulations on the new one.
Yes,
and
sir.
Here's to a new year. We're gonna crush this year. We're gonna win a lot of money. We're gonna take a lot. We're gonna take down some tournaments again this year. So strap it in, and we will see you guys again next week. Enjoy your weekend.
We'll
see you on the next one. We out.
Think you can tell me what to do? You know who you're talking to. To the way the war bounces, I see what you got in measures and ounces. But that's a break, boy. Yeah, that's a break, little man. Break it down. Think you're right, you know. Think you're right, you know. Think you're a big man. You like your little man.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.